Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh.
Inside Move fans, my name is Benson Fetcher, and I will be your host tonight. We have a very exciting episode on the first of the month. It is June 1st, April, May, wrapped up. We are officially into the summer months of baseball. This is where division leaders are decided, wild card races are decided. We can actually get into baseball. It's not called early season now. When you say June, you know you're into the baseball season for the long run. But with that also comes All-Star Talk. And if you've read the description so far, you probably know we are going to be talking about who deserves to make the NL All-Star team. And some of the discussion around that is kind of obvious. I mean, Clayton Kershaw, easy choice to make the team as a starter. But what about Bryce Harper? And as we talked about on Monday, Bryce Harper did not have a really good May. I mean, it's kind of obvious. The pitch around Harper's strategy, it worked out. He walked 31 times, but there was nobody really behind him that could drive him in. And nobody behind that was perceived as a threat to the rest of the pitchers who were pitching to Bryce Harper. So they pretty much just said, put him on and everything will go out well. And that led to about a .500 month for the Nationals. But luckily for those Nationals, the Mets also didn't have such a good month themselves either. Speaking of the Mets, right now they are in a what you call a marathon game. Right now they are creeping into the late extra innings, tied 1-1 at the top of the 13th. So if you have MLB Now, you'll probably know that is on right now instead of MLB Now, which I was gonna watch when I got home, but I entertained myself with the Mets and the White Sox, and then figured for the show, we'd talk NL All-Star. And so for some personal guidelines for myself when we fill these out, and I really think this episode's going to be fun. I like getting into the stats and figuring things out. And really, if you pay attention to All-Star from, you know, April to now, you probably were excited as the initial voting results have been announced in the AL, and the National League will be announced today. And the funny thing is, the Kansas City Royals, they just seem to vote like no other team has ever voted. They, if you remember, Omar Infante, he actually almost made the All-Star team last year. And if you look at the stats, like I do usually when I make my selections, I also have some personal guidelines. But, I mean, there are some wacky Kansas City Royals fans who believe all their players deserve to be All-Stars. So let's have some fun and fill the potential National League All-Star team instead of the American League, because I'd rather not get into a whole Kansas City Royals discussion and why all the players that actually were voted, supposed to be voted by the fans, and, I mean, a lot of them actually don't deserve to be in there. So let's get into my personal guidelines when I came up with my All-Star selections. Number one, this is the All-Star game, not the best 2 months of his career game. So, I mean, if you're an All-Star, that means you're an all-around star. It's not just a breakout 2 months if you're a rookie, if you're a seasoned veteran, and it's just the best 2 months of your career. Remember, it's the All-Star game. I want the all-around stars in that. So when you're listening, make sure to keep that in mind. Two, I do weigh current season performance, but thus heavily factor in past performance. That goes back to my first comment. It's the All-Star game, not the best 2 months of his career game. So therefore, when I went through this current season performance, it did factor in a little bit. For example, if there's two stars and I'm having a tough decision between one, what I'm going to do is simply look at the stats, look at the WAR and all that, and I'll decide who deserves the nod. Factor in past performance, for example, Trevor Story, we'll see if he makes it later on. And I just look at all things accounted there. And number three, We'll stick to the rule, one player per team in the current 34-man roster, which usually breaks out 21 position players and 13 pitchers, and that is what we will do. One player per team, mandatory, as it is in real life, 21 position players and 13 pitchers. I will sort of give a detailed description on my reasoning for each starter, and then I will give a little bit of reasoning for each of my players, but bench players, but not necessary. And if you're into fantasy sports, Julio Urias, he'll be making his second start Thursday. So if you remember, he did not have a very good start. In fact, I picked him up on the waiver wire during his first start. I didn't know he was called up, but he was. Immediately after that start, he was sent back down. And then Alex Wood, he went on the DL with some elbow troubles. And Kenta Maeda, he's having a hand problem right now. So Julio Urias gets a second chance tomorrow night, making a second start. Bryce Harper, he had that leg injury, if you remember. He will be out once again tonight. So the fantasy, I suggest not to start him tonight. Brad Boxberger, who, you know, hyped up. He was back. Muscle strain, he's been put on the DL. Tim Beckham, second baseman, has been called up in placement of him. So that's it in fantasy baseball world. All right, let's get into the National League All-Star team and who I think if, you know, All-Star voting, the All-Star game was June 2nd, who should be playing in that game. So we'll start off with the catcher. We'll go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And if you ever scored a game, you know that goes catcher, first base, second base, third base, shortstop, left field, center field, and then to right field. Then we will get into pitchers, and then bench position players. So without further ado, I know you've probably all been waiting for this. You've all been excited for this. Who did I pick as my catcher? All right, listen. Jonathan Lucroy, he has the slight edge in the batting numbers and the war, but I'm going to go with the guy who's become the best all-around catcher in the game with Buster Posey. And I know a lot of people think Salvador Perez is the best catcher in the game, but he dealt with his injury. And I think Buster Posey is a better hitter than him. And they're around the same at the defensive level. So if you factor all that in together, Buster Posey deserves to be in this because he's the best all-around catcher in the game. He is really the all-around star. And that's why I selected Buster Posey. I mean, Jonathan Lucroy. His batting numbers are great. His war, great. And it's for a not-so-good team. So if you factor that into the equation, you probably think, hey, why aren't I picking Jonathan Lucroy? Well, Posey, he's just a better player here because he's the best all-around catcher of the game, in my opinion. You might disagree. You might pick Yachty, who's sort of on the decline. We might pick Salvi Perez. But I think Buster Posey deserves this. He's the best all-around catcher in the game. And the Giants, they're playing well. Their team might have more than one all-star in this all-star game, according to myself. And probably in July when the actual competition goes down in San Diego. And I'm really excited for the all-star game. As you can already tell, I'm talking about it on the first of the month, June 1st. Let's get into our first baseman, speaking of firsts. And with Joey Votto, he's off to a slow start right now. And Anthony Rizzo, he's putting up good but not dominant numbers. The two-time MVP runner-up Paul Goldschmidt gets my vote just barely over Brandon Belt. So, reason why I pick this is Goldschmidt, he hasn't really had much support due to the season-ending injury to A.J. Pollock, which has been devastating for the Diamondbacks. They were highly hyped up, and they are not living up to that prescribed hype. On the DL stand for David Peralta, we talked about on Monday, he'll be hoping to come back this weekend. So, therefore, the Diamondbacks don't have Pollock in the lineup. They don't have Peralta. So what does that mean for Goldschmidt? That means he's drawing a ton of walks as teams are pitching around him, just like in D.C., they're pitching around Bryce Harper. The power numbers, though, they have been climbing back into, you know, the Goldschmidt territory. And with an OBP north of 400, very impressive, and his usual great defense, he leads NL first baseman in war, which actually surprised me when I was going through this. So therefore, he's been great. He's been a runner-up two times for the MVP award, and he's not getting the recognition I think he deserves in that tough lineup right now. So, therefore, Paul Goldschmidt gets the vote. Joey Votto, he's off to a slow start. And after April, I mean, he was really mad. He said he didn't even want to play baseball anymore if he played that bad. And it really wasn't that bad. But it's still a slow start. It's not all-star worthy. Anthony Rizzo, I mean, he's been good. He's been solid for the Cubs. I mean, he's one of the main reasons the Cubs are where they are right now. But it's just not dominant enough like I see Goldschmidt at. And Brandon Belt, who's been playing fantastic right now for the Giants, along with Buster Posey. I just think Goldschmidt has been the all-around star over Belt, and that's why he gets my vote there. Brandon Belt, very good player. I'll not be surprised if Belt or Goldschmidt or Rizzo get the start in July, but if I'm, you know, say I'll be all, I'd pick Goldschmidt to be my starting first baseman for the National League in the All-Star game. He just deserved it. All-around best first baseman thus far in the season. And his career is one of the best first basemen in the league, so you have to take that into account as well. All right, we have to take a quick break. I apologize, not expecting to get a break so early. And if you've been listening to the show in the past, you probably know our breaks are relatively short, but I didn't go to the bathroom before the show, so I'm going to do that. I'll probably be back in a minute or two. So just wait until then. I'm going to play a nice song for you. So really quick, 2 minutes. Hopefully I'll be back. Sorry for the delay. But when you got to go, you got to go. We'll be back to talk. Second baseman, National League All-Star next after the break.
On the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this. Sometimes you gotta stay in, and you know where I live. Yeah, you know what we is. Sometimes you gotta stay in. Welcome to my.
For the delay, I apologize for just tuning in. We do not take that long of breaks usually. There are 30-second breaks, but I had to get my business done. A quick 2-minute break, but we will probably go into the 30 minutes. So you're lucky you get me for 16 minutes straight. And then after that, we will not be taking a 2-minute break like I took right now. But to move into a National League second baseman. So without further ado, I will tell you who I think deserves the fans' votes at second base for the National League All-Star. And I got to go with Daniel Murphy right here. It is really a tough call between Murphy and Zobrist. But really, Murphy, he's became a different hitter last season. And he's carried over the power spike he showed in the second half and the postseason. Right now, he's at .395 average, 25 extra base hits. That was entering yesterday. And he also leads the NL in OPS. So with all things considered, Zobrist has been great, but he doesn't have the staggering 395 average. And most people don't have that high of an average going in the gym. And obviously Murphy, he'll be gunning for that 400. If I had to make a prediction, will 400 happen for Daniel Murphy? Come on, you got to say no there. But Murphy has been great. Extra base hits like crazy. And if you're looking at NL and OPS, which if you don't know this, on base percentage and slugging, if you're getting on base and slugging the ball like Daniel Murphy is, I mean, how can you not get the vote over Ben Zobrist? You know, Ben Zobrist has been very good. Zobrist, he started off a little bit slow, but overall, fantastic. I just got to give the vote to Daniel Murphy. A very nice pickup by the Nationals. I thought he was going to be a bust. I thought it was smart by the Mets not to sign him, but he's obviously proven the Mets wrong so far. You don't know what's going to happen later in the season or later in his contract, but very nice pickup so far for the Nationals. And Daniel Murphy, you would be getting my vote as of today on National League second baseman. Let's move to the shortstop. And come on, yes, Trevor Story has the most impressive power numbers, but Brandon Crawford, who's getting my vote, is the better player once you adjust for home park and Fackner's gold glove caliber defense. Trevor Story, he's been fantastic. I mean, he had the most home runs ever in the first 6 games. I believe he had 7. But Crawford, again, he's a better player. You have to adjust for home park. Brandon Crawford, he plays in a huge park. He has to hit the ball a long way. Now, I'm not saying Trevor Story does have to hit a long way, but the air is just a tad bit different, which might give Trevor Story more home runs that Brandon Crawford might not get. And when you go to gold glove caliber defense and you see what Brandon Crawford is capable of doing, he is one of the best shortstops in the league. I think the best defensive shortstop in the National League is running the best shortstop in the major leagues. You put that into it and you put everything up against Trevor Story and you see that Brandon Crawford's a better player. Trevor Story, though, again, this is the All-Star game, not the best 2 months of his career game. And when you see that, Brandon Crawford, he is the all-star, all-around star. Trevor Story, I'm not saying he's not a star. He's turning into a bona fide superstar. But this technically is the best 2 months of his career guy right now. And I'm just not ready to put him into an All-Star game. Goldschmidt and Posey and Murphy, he's just not at that level yet to me. I mean, ever since the first week where he was putting up records, breaking all of these records, ever since then, it's not really – Trevor Story hasn't been the highlight. I mean, people are making puns at the beginning of the game. It's time to talk about the story. I mean, I was even doing that myself. But at the end of the day, Brandon Crawford is just the better shortstop for the National League to represent. Let's go to the third baseman. And I am going to pick Nolan Arenado. I mean, he would really be a solid MVP candidate on a better team. I like that he's walked almost as often as he struck out. And I expect that average to climb back over 300 if he keeps it up. Third base, I didn't even like debate anybody but Nolan Arenado. And the reason why I say he'd be a solid MVP candidate on a better team is one, because the Rockies, let's just face it, they're not that good. No pitcher wants to pitch in Colorado with that thin air. And that has to do with why they're so bad. It's their location. You just have to deal with that. But another reason why I say to be a solid MVP candidate on a better team is because of this. He doesn't get the credit that players, you know, in San Francisco, if they put up the numbers that Arenado puts up. Because people, they tend to think Colorado carries out a lot of home runs. But if you look at this guy's home and road splits, what you see is that they're pretty much similar. He goes and does amazing at home, and that's expected because it's in Colorado. But then he goes on the road, and he produces just about the same amount. When you put that all in consideration, Arenado, he'd definitely be an MVP on another team. No doubt. Any other team in the West, I mean, besides the Diamondbacks, should be an MVP. But people just don't take into account the home and road splits. At least the baseball writers don't when they vote for MVP. Because, number one, if he'd be on a better team, a playoff team, he'd be MVP. And number two, if people took into account the home and road splits, he would definitely be, I think, the MVP of the league. And another reason why I think he is so good and why there was no really consideration for me at third base is because he's walked as often as he struck out. It's just a little bit under a strikeout plateau. But think of power hitters. They strike out a ton. This is not the case with Nolan Arenado. And the Rockies' offense, it is solid. So there are people behind him. And the fact that he's looking for his pitch, and when he gets his pitch, he's hitting this pitch, that's why he is my National League third baseman. That's why he's one of the better players in all of Major League Baseball. And if he continues to walk as often as he's striking out and put up those power numbers, then his average is going to climb back over 300. And I will not be surprised if he's once again right up there with the MVP talk. But everybody always says, go to a different ballpark. Be on a better team. And that's just sort of the case with Nolan Arenado. And if the Rockies, if they can be better, then he will be MVP one of these years. But if they don't get better, I think Nolan Arenado is just going to have to put up absolutely monster numbers to do so. And even if he does do that, I think they're going to credit the ballpark to that too. Okay, let's move to outfielders, and we are picking three of them since they are three starting outfielders. And in the opening, we talked about Clayton Kershaw. He is obviously the lock right now to be the starter for the National League, so there's no debate on that. But for outfielders, I talked about Bryce Harper, another superstar. Will he make it into this? Because he didn't have a really good May. And I'll end that conversation right now. Bryce Harper will be a starter for the National League. And, okay, so he's slipped to 8th among NL outfielders in WAR because of his May. But he's still getting on base over 40% of the time and slugging over 500. Remember that part about the All-Star game? This isn't the best 2 months of a career game. It is the All-Star game. Bryce Harper is an all-around superstar. Nationals just need to beef up that lineup so he doesn't get walked so much. And that has to do with the fact that he's getting on base over 40% of the time. He has a plus 400 OEP. And that was one of the reasons why I selected Goldschmidt to be my National League first baseman over Brandon Belt and Anthony Rizzo, that OEP. And when you're getting on base that much of the time and you're slugging as much as he's doing, even though he had a rough May, I think he will turn it around, and he deserves to get a starting spot for the National League. And that is the important part about the All-Star game. He is an all-around superstar, and he deserves to be in the outfield. And really, when I looked into the numbers and saw everything in my personal guidelines, he deserves to be an All-Star this year. Let's move to our next outfielder. And my guy is Yoenis Cespedes of the New York Mets. And there was a lot of criticism when the Mets re-signed him, I should say, in the offseason. I mean, who says he can't repeat his August and September numbers again? The big guy, he is absolutely mashing. 15 home runs, 281 average, 358 OBP, and a 611 slugging. That is fantastic. And he definitely deserves to be an All-Star. And again, the Mets were scrutinized for re-signing because August and September pretty much a month that the Mets acquired him for, he was fantastic, one of the best players in the league. In fact, he was being considered a National League MVP candidate for that. The Mets, they did take a chance on him, and they did re-sign him, and the offense has been better because of it. And if he's hitting 15 home runs to this date right now, it's just proven that it was a good sign. 281, solid batting average. He's around 350 in the OBP again, but slugging better than Bryce Harper. And I have Bryce Harper as my National League starting outfielder. So if you take that in consideration, if I'm putting Bryce Harper into this, I definitely need to put Yoenis Cespedes as a starter. So there's no question to me, Harper, Cespedes as my two outfielders. But my next outfielder is Andrew McCutchen of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, he's having such a bad year is what people are saying. Well, guess what? To all you people that saying Andrew McCutchen is having such a bad year, he's only on pace for, 110 runs, 29 home runs, and 75 RBIs from the second spot in the order. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? And he is having somewhat of a slow start. But just imagine that. He's on pace for 29 home runs, 75 RBIs out of the two hole. Imagine once he starts really heating up and people are saying he's having a great year. Imagine what will happen then. Will that home run number creep up to around 40 maybe? RBIs up to plus 100? I mean, when will people give Andrew McCutchen credit where credit is due? I think he's sort of fallen into the Clayton Kershaw type of situation. Last year, Clayton Kershaw, he didn't really have, you know, what people expect out of him. But he really still had a great season. Andrew McCutchen is not producing the way Pirates fans and Major League Baseball fans expect out of him. But at the end of the day, he is getting the job done out of the two-hole. And I think if he was in the three-hole, he'd be on pace for more RBIs. But I really do think it was a smart idea for the Pirates to move him in to the two-hole. The reason being is because the Pirates didn't want him coming on with two outs and nobody on. And he really hasn't been coming up with two outs and nobody on. It's kind of hard when you start the game, because if the first batter gets out, it's only nobody on with one out. And most of the time, the pitcher isn't leading off an inning. Smart decision by the Pirates. And if he's on base to do this out of the two-hole, Neil Huntington, Clint Hurdle, they just did it again. Great decision by the Pirates organization. And Andrew McCutchen has been producing. And if he can get his act together, so to speak, he might be on pace for a 40 home run, 100 RBI season. And that's not even a joke right there. And all things considered, I think he's the best outfielder right now in the National League. And Yoan Cespedes is definitely contesting that Bryce Harper, Stewart in there. But Andrew McCutchen definitely deserves the spot as a National League starting outfielder. Let's move to starting pitcher. And my starting pitcher for the National League is going to be Clayton Kershaw of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Remember last year when National League players didn't even vote in Kershaw as one of the top five starting pitchers in the league? Yes, that actually happened. And Kershaw only made the team as a replacement for Max Scherzer. So the next time you think the players know better, you're wrong. Because Clayton Kershaw, great pitch last year, even better this year, and it's just scary how much better he can actually get. And it was funny last year. How did he not make the team not as a replacement? It was just kind of funny. And the players, they didn't vote him as the top five starting pitcher in the league. That's crazy. I mean, have they not seen Clayton Kershaw's career? Have they not seen that he's an all-around star? Instead, they voted in guys who had the best 2 months of their career, sort of type of thing. Instead, voting in the all-around star in Clayton Kershaw. Again, my guidelines were easily voted in Kershaw last year. But instead, they decided not to do that, and they thought he was outside of the top five, which is kind of crazy, because if you're building an organization, how do you not build an organization around this guy in your top five? Let's say you had a fantasy draft, and there were no other teams in it, and you just got to go through and you pick, you know, 25 guys without being asked, like, if other teams want to pick them. It was just like you had the 25 number one picks in a row, and you would go through. There's no doubt in my mind that Clayton Kershaw would be on that team. No doubt on my mind at all. All right, so Clayton Kershaw, obviously, he deserves a starting nod. Max Scherzer, he's sort of up there, I think, but I think it was a very easy decision. Clayton Kershaw deserves to be the National League starting pitcher. Unless he does absolutely awful, there's nothing stopping that. So let's get to on-the-bench position players speaking. And usually there are two catchers on the bench, and usually they do factor these guys in. And one of the guys, two of the guys I'm factoring as a catcher, and I talked about sort of rivalry in Posey, is Jonathan Lucroy of the Milwaukee Brewers. He deserves he has a great WAR right now, great hitting numbers. He deserves to be the National League backup catcher. Third string goes to Wilson Ramos of the Washington Nationals. He's having a great season right now, and he deserves to be an all-star. First baseman bench player is going to Brandon Bell of the San Francisco Giants. And I think if Goldschmidt wasn't just, like, had so much better of a past, then I think Bell should have started. But since he hasn't had such good of a past compared to Goldschmidt, Goldschmidt got the nod for me. And he'll be the only backup first baseman. At second base, I'm picking Ben Zobrist of the Cubs. He's been playing amazing. Again, it was a really tough call for me between Murphy and Zobrist. But at the end of the day, Murphy is better, so Zobrist deserves the nod. Shortstop, Trevor Story of the Rockies. Again, it was between Crawford and Story for me. Once I factored in on the home park and the defense, Crawford deserved the nod, but I couldn't leave Story out, so Story deserves the shortstop bench spot. third string shortstop. It goes to Zach Cozart of the Cincinnati Reds. And I don't think he'd have this good of a season. I have him on my fantasy baseball team, and I didn't draft him. Nobody drafted him. I just picked him up, and he's been solid so far, and pleasantly surprised from Zach Cozart of the Cincinnati Reds. Third base backup is Chris Bryant of the Chicago Cubs. And it's kind of funny I'm saying this, because Nolan Arenado, for me, he was hands down my starting third baseman for the National League. But Chris Bryant, he's pretty impressive too. And it's funny that we're saying he's a backup, because any, like, I think in the American League he'd start, but not in the National League, where Nolan Arenado is just dominating the third baseman category. And the outfield, usually there's a lot of them, and for me, I have six of them. First one is Ryan Braun of the Milwaukee Brewers, and I saw him out playing in person once this year, and he hit two home runs in that game. Ryan Braun, he's not going anywhere, and he deserves to be an all-star still. Dexter Fowler of the Cubs, he wasn't really supposed to be on the Cubs this year. He was trying to test free agency, but he did come back, and he deserves an all-star spot because he's just been dynamo out of that leadoff spot for the Cubs, and a big reason why the Cubs are doing so well right now. Gregory Polanco, the Pittsburgh Pirates, my next outfielder, and he deserves to be an all-star because he has just been playing so well. He has one of the sweetest left-handed swings I've ever seen in my life. He had his first grand slam the other day against the Marlins, and he almost hit a grand slam against A.J. Ramos last night when they were down 3-0 in the ninth. I'll just take the lead. That would have been something from Gregory Polanco. And the Pirates and the Marlins are playing, so I'm going to have to pick a hot Marlins outfielder in Marcelo Ozuna. He's been amazing. Stanton hasn't really been on the field so far, and Ozuna, he's just filled in. And kind of funny that I bring this up, because Ozuna, he's actually batting fourth. Guess where Stanton's batting? He's batting fifth. That just shows how Don Mattingly appreciates Marcelo Ozuna, and maybe Barry Bonds had some sort of a push in that. Next outfielder, Stephen Piscotty of the St. Louis Cardinals. He's kind of big for the Cardinals, and he had to, because he had to really take the load so far. But the Cardinals have not been showing up for him, per se. But Scotty's an all-star, but really the whole team has definitely not been all-star worthy. And the whole Pirates outfield, to me, deserves to be all-stars. Next outfielder is Starling Marte, the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's been great. Gold Glover. He drives in a ton of RBIs. Absolutely amazing so far from Starling Marte of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And really, the NL depth, I think, it is clearly in the outfield. I mean, I couldn't even squeeze in guys like Odubel Herrera on the Phillies on the team, who's just been playing amazing right now. I mean, I can sort of see at catcher if you want to go with Yadier or Molina instead of Ramos. I mean, I'm not going to fight you on that one. But Ramos, he's been good, so that's why I put him in ahead of Molina, because Ramos's team has been good. Molina's team has not been so good. Cozart, he is my one Reds representative. He's having a career year at the plate alongside his usual plus defense. So those two combined deserves to be a bench spot for the Reds and Zach Cozart. Alesmys Diaz, he has slowed down after a solid start, and Cozart has matched Diaz in WAR. So that's really why I'm giving Cozart the nod over Diaz in the depth place. And really, I had to find room for Marte, since he led all NL position players in WAR entering yesterday, despite a terrible 43-5 strikeout-to-walk ratio. It doesn't seem possible, but he's hitting over 300. He gets hit by pitches, he swipes 17 bases, and plays great defense. He does everything well, except walk. But all things considered, Marte definitely deserves to be on the team. So, he deserves the nod for me. Let's move to on the bench for pitchers, and these will be all the guys that don't get the nod, Clayton Kershaw. And Jake Arrieta, he's in there. He's pitched absolutely fantastic. There's no doubt he should be an all-star. If Kershaw wasn't a National Leaguer, I think Arrieta would definitely be the starter. Next starting pitcher, Noah Syndergaard of the New York Mets. He has been absolutely fantastic. I love what he's been doing so far, and I am just proud of him. Next starting pitcher, Steven Strasburg of the Nationals. He's going to get banked this offseason if he continues his pace. And if he does well in the postseason, he's definitely that pay is going to increase and increase and increase. But hey, you might be wondering, why am I talking about this? Well, he already got banked. Steven Strasburg re-signed with the Nationals. So that is that. Starting pitcher, Madison Bumgarner of the San Francisco Giants. along with Johnny Cueto, they both get the nods. Cueto, excellent sign. Bumgarner, old study, steady as usual. Starting pitcher Jose Fernandez Amons, he pitched great last night, 7th straight win. Did not start off too hot, but he has definitely turned it on as of late. Next starting pitcher, Aaron Nola of the Philadelphia Phillies, he has been pitching amazing. He's really a sleeper. He's underrated in my mind. One of the best young pitchers in the game. He's one of the best pitchers in the game right now. He definitely deserves a spot as an all-star. My final starting pitcher, Julio Teheran of the Atlanta Braves, and I had to find room to put a Brave on here, and he is definitely the best Brave in my mind so far. Let's get into the relief pitching category. First reliever, Kenley Jansen of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's been Mr. Reliable, and the Dodgers have had trouble getting the ball to him, but after the ball's in his hand, the Dodgers usually win. Relief pitcher, Mark Melanson of the Pirates. He has been absolutely amazing. He is, again, old study for the Pirates, back of the bullpen. Watson and Melanson have been great. They just have a little bit of trouble getting the ball to those two. Relief pitcher, Hector Rondon of the Cubs. He's a closer for the best team in baseball. What can I say? He deserves a spot on the team. Fernando Rodney of the Padres. He's really turned his career around, I think, with the Padres, and I like what he's been doing so far. Fernando Rodney, congratulations on an all-star spot from my perspective. And then, sort of coming out of nowhere, Jeromar Gomez of the Philadelphia Phillies. He deserves a nod, too. He's one of the best closers in the game right now, and he was a starter not too long ago. So, Jeromar Gomez, congratulations for turning your starting pitcher to a relief pitcher to a closer and being one of the best in the business for a pretty good team so far in the Philadelphia Phillies. So, right now, starting pitchers, they're really pretty straightforward, with Teheran repping the Braves with a 2.77 ERA. You got to ignore the Braves' win-loss record for pitchers. I'm pretty sure we've never had a starting pitcher to make the All-Star team with a 1-5 record, though. But when you consider the 2.77 ERA, you have to put him in. Rodney, he's my Padres rep. But it's not like he's underserving, considering he has a 0 ERA. He's allowed only one unearned run in 19 innings, and that is why he deserves to be an All-Star. I mean, if you want to squeeze John Lester or Garrett Cole in here, you could replace Nola or Teheran with a Roddy Biscaino representing the Braves, but you have to have a Braves, so Teheran or Biscaino deserve to be in there. Lester or Cole, I could probably replace Nola for him, but I think a pretty solid pitching core. Now it's time for me to discuss the starting lineup. In the one spot, Andrew McCutchen in the center field. I have him there. He seems to be in the two hole, but I mean, why not move him up one? I think he would fit nicely in there. And at the start of the career, he did bat leadoff, so I think it would be a cool full circle for him, even though his career is not even ending yet. He deserves to bat leadoff, I think. Bat second, Daniel Murphy. He's also playing second. I mean, that average, he deserves to be right up there. He's getting extra base hits. If Kutch can get on, Murphy can drive him in right away. Batting third, Goldschmidt, and that's really where he belongs. He has extreme power numbers. He's amazing, and he won't be walked with that lineup around him. Batting fourth, Cespedes in left field. I have him right there because he can simply mash. He's batting 281. That's slugging over 600. He's been playing absolutely out of his mind. It's sort of resembling the August and September we saw out of him last year. Batting fifth, Bryce Harper. He can mash, and if they can't walk him, then they're going to have to pitch him, and Harper might have an amazing all-star game. Ryan Braun will be the DH. He deserves that spot because the National League really has depth in the outfield, and I decided to just go ahead and put Braun in that category. Next, Arenado, third base. Even though he's been absolutely amazing with the bat, I just don't see any way to put him above that spot because all those players above him, that's really their natural role. Next, Buster Posey, the catcher. He is good at offense, but he's not as good as the aforementioned guys. Then Baron Crawford, shortstop. Slick fielder, he's not as good as a hitter, but he definitely deserves a spot in that starting lineup. And obviously the starter, Clayton Kershaw, will be taking the hill. We're going to take a quick break on Inside MLB. But when we come back, we are going to be talking about Marlon Byrd and how he suspended for 162 games due to this PED catch, you could say. We'll be back in 30 seconds on Inside MLB. Yeah. We are back on Inside MLB. What am I saying? We are back on Inside MLB, and we just talked about the National League. I gave you all my National League All-Star starters and bench players and all that, all 34 of them, and that took up the majority of our show. But I did want to get into talking about Marlon Byrd and how he suspended 162 games for PED violation. Now, Marlon Byrd, he's probably bounced around the big leagues, so you're probably wondering where he is nowadays. And he was in Cleveland, but he's been suspended for a whole 162 games by Major League Baseball after he tested positive for the growth hormone. I'm going to try to say this, secretagogue apomorlin. Okay, so this growth hormone, obviously helps him grow his muscles and everything. It would probably help with his hitting, not necessarily with running anymore. But if he wants to stay in the big leagues, he's got to hit. And to be in the lineup every day, he's got to hit. So I can see why he took it as an aging player. But this, I think, sort of destroyed his reputation. And it's sad for Marlon Byrd because I liked him when he was on the Pirates. I really did. And, this is sort of starting a growing trend with Marlon Byrd. The fact that he's a repeat offender. And that's why he's been suspended 162 games. So sad for Marlon Byrd, sad for the Indians who liked him in the lineup, but what are you going to do when this guy is cheating? MLB said that the suspension, which is without pay, is effective immediately. He will not be allowed to appeal because he will not be playing tonight because it is effective immediately. Even if he does appeal, he will be suspended. He's 38 years old right now. He's talking about his age. He'd been previously suspended for PEDs in 2012. When he was a free agent after being released by the Boston Red Sox, he had 50-game suspension after testing positive for tamoxifen. So this is sort of starting a growing trend again, and it's not good because if he gets caught one more time, he'll be out of baseball for life, like Henry Mejia was. So Marlon Byrd definitely does not want to join that club. So he better work hard to get his body naturally together instead of growth hormone lead together. And he released a statement after being suspended saying, "I alone am responsible for what I put in my body, and therefore I've decided to forego my right to an appeal in this matter and accept the suspension. I apologize for any harm this has caused the Cleveland Indians, Indians' fans, my teammates, and most importantly, my family." I like the statement personally. And the fact that he's not appealing, and he is the one responsible for putting this in his body. He said he did it. I am proud of that. I am proud of his apology. Even though he did do a bad thing, I still like what he's done in this apology. It seemed appropriate to me. I like the fact that he apologized to the Indians, because the Indians are the ones that took the chance on him. And the fact that he turned their back on the Indians organization and did this, it probably caused harm to them. They never want to see their guy go down like this, and it's just sad for the Indians organization. And I think they might feel a little bit betrayed after Marlon Byrd did this. And it's definitely not bringing good media to them either, after they're probably have to answer the tough questions that Marlon Byrd, who is receiving, but the Indians definitely do have to answer the questions as well. Where to go from here, and all the stuff like that. He apologizes to the Indians fans next. And I think that's smart, too, because the fan base, they like Marlon Byrd. A lot of the cities he goes to, they love Marlon Byrd. They fall in love with him. And the fact that he's caught for this, it destroys his reputation to them, because they know Marlon Byrd as a lovable guy. And when a lovable guy is jacking up on hormones, it's not going to turn out well with the fans, necessarily. He apologizes to his teammates third, and once again, good decision, because, he's a fun guy to have in the clubhouse, and the fact that he won't be there now is probably signing to them. It's also a big part of that lineup, and the fact that he's not going to be there anymore, not helping the Indians produce, smart there. But then he said, most importantly, my family, because he's one that's paying the bills, and the fact that the suspension was without pay, he will not be able to be paid. So he needs to get back together, get his act together, sign with a team next year, and just prove to everybody that he's done with PEDs, because when he uses PEDs, things don't turn out well for him, because he usually gets caught and he's a repeat offender. This is the second night it's been caught in 4 years, so hopefully we don't see something go down in 2018, because that would follow the growing trend as we see right now. Again, in a statement accepting the suspension, Bird said Wednesday today that in 2012 he was using tamoxifen. He said, "On the advice of a physician for a medical condition resulting from surgery, and I accepted my suspension without challenge." Again, smart, because the physician, he prescribed it to him. He played baseball with it in his body, though, and he probably knew it was illegal. He's probably mad at his physician, too, but again, I like the fact that he didn't appeal in 2012. He said, once again, "Since that time, I paid close attention to the substances that are banned by the Joint Drug Agreement, as I had no intention of taking any banned substances. I relied upon a medical professional for assistance and advice with respect to the supplements that I was taking. However, certain supplements I was taking were not on the NSF certified for sport list, and therefore I assumed certain risks in taking them. When I learned that I had tested positive for ipamorlin, I retained the services of private counsel and an independent chemist to determine the origin of the ipamorlin test result, because I never knowingly ingested ipamorlin. After an extensive investigation by my lawyers and an independent chemist, it was concluded that the most likely source of ipamorlin was a tainted supplement. I alone am responsible for what I put in my body, and therefore I decided for forego my right to an appeal in this matter and accept the suspension. I apologize for any harm this has caused the Cleveland Indians fans, my teammates, and most importantly, my family." Again, I told you about the last word statement he said, and I think it's smart that he's been paying attention to the Joint Drug Agreement. He's had, you know, an extensive staff help him along that way, and it's smart, but if he's taking a tainted drug supplement that nobody really knew about, you sort of have to fault that. And also, he had known risk that he was taking NSF certified for sport list, not on that list what he was taking. So the fact that a tainted supplement was found, and he did extensive research whether to appeal or not. And the thing is, once he realizes he did something on accident, even though he understood the risks, he just owns up to it, he apologizes, and he just has to move on, and he really has to be careful with supplements. If I was him, stick to what's on the list. If you do that, because they're given a list of what they're allowed to take and what they're not allowed to take, just take what you're allowed to take, because if you take something that's sort of in the in-between and something that you're not allowed to take is in it or there's no ingredients on it, then you have to be smarter about it, Marlon Byrd. And I know that the first one was sort of an accident, but this one is not really an accident, even though it sort of was, because he understood the risk. He knew what he's doing. He did not necessarily know he's putting ipamorlin into his body, but at the end of the day, the tainted supplement that he took had ipamorlin in it, and he decided not to appeal. Some people, they did come out, and they did, announce stuff about him. Retired pitcher Dan Heron spoke about Jeremy Guthrie, Detroit Tigers right-hander Justin Verlander, spoken about Miami Marlins second baseman D. Gordon's suspensions for PEDs, were among the players to react to the news on Twitter. Dan Heron said, "Ken Rosenthal, can I get back all the home runs he hit off of me? Please? Thanks." Also, last year, Matt Tuckley returned from a broken wrist in 16 days at age 38, proceeded to homer off of me that day. So Dan Heron is definitely taking some shots here at Marlon Byrd. He definitely thinks he cheated on purpose, and how he returned from a broken wrist in 16 days at the age of 38. Dan Heron's proving a point here, and he's trying to show that Marlon Byrd might not be as truthful as he is. He might not have the integrity that he's saying he is. I mean, after all, he's been caught cheating twice. I like Dan Heron's statement actually a little bit more than I like Marlon Byrd's statement. Marlon Byrd's statement is a little bit longer, but now that I'm realizing it, I think it's a little bit more fake than Dan Heron's. Dan Heron's may have been on Twitter. Marlon Byrd's may have been more authentic. But I like what Dan Heron said. Let's get into what Jeremy Guthrie said. He said, "Marlon Byrd is a joke. All you cheaters are a joke. Do it the right way one time. Accept your ups and downs." That's the truth. I mean, these guys, they're a joke. These cheaters are a joke. And now I'm realizing, I think Marlon Byrd is now a profound liar. If you can do it the right way one time, like Jeremy Guthrie has done, You have to accept the ups and downs of baseball. When you're in your ups, it's great. But when you're in your downs, you have to work out. You have to do it yourself to get back to that upper point. I think Marlon Byrd might have been a little bit lazy, especially in his later ages. And it just didn't come naturally to him, so he had to use some foreign substance, some foreign supplements to help him get back to where he was. Dan Heron, Jeremy Guthrie, well spoken right there. And they are really a joke, especially D. Gordon. So again, Justin Verlander, and pretty much he just had a mad face. And you better be mad because he faced Marlon Byrd, and the fact that he probably doesn't like facing a guy that's cheating. He probably didn't know he was cheating at the time. I mean, all these players are finding out that they're cheating now, and it really is something that these players are reacting so profoundly and like this, because it just shows that they care about the integrity of the game, and especially the pitchers, because the pitchers, they're the ones that have to, you know, deal with these hitters, and most of the time, the hitters are the ones caught taking performance-enhancing drugs, and the pitchers never like that. I mean, in the steroid era, the pitchers, they weren't pitching well because of the steroid takers. Now that it's sort of mellowed out, the pitchers are better, and they don't like anybody that's cheating in their game where they're trying to get them out. Because when they have an edge over you that you don't have with them, it's not a level playing field. So the fact that they're reacting this profoundly makes me see that Marlon Byrd is a liar, he's a cheater, and I really think that he deserves this 162-game suspension. I'm happy he didn't appeal because I don't want to see him on the field again. I don't think he deserves the right to go back to another team, because how do we know that he wasn't taking performance-enhancing drugs before 2012? How do we know he wasn't taking them in between 2012 and 2016, and he's just being caught now? How do we not know any of this? I mean, he could have been taking drugs for all we know for since 2008. It could be like something like that. He could be taking them for his whole career. You never know how long a guy is doing it. Most of the time, they are sorry. I think one of the key scenarios is, what was I going to say? That they apologize for being caught. They don't apologize for doing the action. That's what I feel like Marlon Byrd is doing here. He is apologizing for being caught. And I think that's what Jeremy Guthrie, Dan Heron, and Justin Verlander are saying right here. And after he received news of this, he packed his belongings yesterday after he lost to the Rangers. But he didn't tell the team about suspension until he called manager Terry Francona on Wednesday morning. Later, he spoke to his teammates as a group in Cleveland's clubhouse. I think that was good of him. Again, he is taking this like a man, but he's taking the fact that he's being caught like a man. He is not, I don't think he's sorry for what he did. He's sorry for being caught. And for all we know, he might be right back to work with his chemists and physicians and all that on a better drug and how not to get caught. Marlon Byrd said in front of his clubhouse that Francona said this. Marlon stood up in front of everybody and took responsibility and apologized. And basically, he told the guys his career's over, and this is not how he wanted it to end. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of criticism of the situation, but it doesn't take away that we care about him. We care about our team, but we also care about the individuals. So that hurts. It feels like we got kicked in the stomach a little bit. So pretty much he's retiring. He is retiring. And obviously he does not want his career to end this way. I think it would have been smarter for him to go out last year. I mean, he can't keep testing his luck like this. And eventually the luck runs out. The luck has run out here with Marlon Byrd. And he had a good career, but it's definitely going to go down as a tainted career. And he will not really be remembered for anything he did as actuality because of a repeat offender for performance-enhancing drugs. Byrd, he signed a minor league contract with the Indians in spring training. He didn't make the major league team out of camp. Before he was suspended, he was hitting 270, 5 home runs and 19 RBIs and 115 at-bats. I mean, he was having a solid season, but you have to consider that probably none of that was actually real because he was tested positive and the growth hormones happened and probably did their magic. Even though growth hormones don't help you hit a fastball, they obviously help you hit further. They help muscle development and all this. So we don't know if any what he did is actually real. And I don't think it was real. All of it is a joke. All of it is fake. And it's kind of funny, too, because the Indians organization, again, they are really probably feeling the heat right now. He's the second Indians outfielder to receive a PED suspension this season alone. Abraham Almonte, he received an 80-game suspension before the season for their performance-enhancing drug, Baldinone, and that was one of the reasons why Marlon Byrd was brought in. So it's kind of funny, all this going down. And the Indians, they're going to be really scrutinized now because this is the second offender on the team this season alone, and I think they need to sort of tighten the reins. They really do. They have to say, if anybody's caught this, they probably need to drop them. I think the strongest statement they could say right now is just get rid of Abraham Almonte altogether. If they do that right now, drop him, send him to free agency, and it just shows the precedent, sets the precedent, that we are not going to tolerate this anymore. We are not going to tolerate players cheating like this. And Almonte was on fall down, and Burr was on his drug. If they keep doing this, then it's not going to be nice for the Indians because their reputation is being pretty much tarnished by Almonte and Bird, two offenders. But most of the guys doing it are clean. They are clean. Almonte and Bird are two separate scenarios. So, and Almonte, he had been expected, really, to get significant playing time to start the season, while outfielder Michael Brantley was sidelined following shoulder surgery. Brantley made his debut on April 25th, but was shut down again on May 14th because of his shoulder. He hit .231, 7 RBIs, and 11 games a season. But there's really no timetable for his return. On roster moves after Bird's suspension, they were announced. The Indians recalled outfielder Tyler Naquin from AAA Columbus, an option right-hander Sean Armstrong. The team also purchased left-hander Tom Gorzelani's contract from Columbus to fill Bird's roster spot. Last season, splitting time between Cincinnati and San Francisco, Bird batted a combined .247 with 23 home runs and 73 RBIs in 135 games. As a career .275 hitter, Bird has connected for at least 20 homers and driven in 70 or more runs in each of the past three seasons. He batted .271 against left-handers as a career .286 average against lefties. Bird began his career in 2002 with Philadelphia and finished fourth in voting for the 2003 National League Rookie of the Year. He has 159 career home runs while playing for 10 teams during his 15-season career. Well, wrap on Marlon's Bird career, and that is a wrap on our show. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Benson Factor. I hope you have a wonderful Wednesday. Hey, Pittsburgh is playing the Stanley Cup Final. If you're not watching baseball, make sure to tune into that. I'll be watching the Pirate game until the third period. Then I'll be tuning into the Penguin game. So let's go, Pens. Let's go, Bucks. Hopefully, Pittsburgh will have another great night. I will see you guys on... No, I will not see you guys on Friday. I will see you guys on Monday. I have a baseball game on Friday. I apologize for that. So thank you for tolerating me this week. I appreciate it. Head over to our website at MLBinside.com today for all your news and updates regarding Inside MLB. And have a wonderful week and weekend. I will see you guys on Monday. Same time, 5:30 to 6:30 right here on blogtalkradio.com, or if you go doing it via Lenny Mellon's website, which I know some of you do listen via that. I post a link every night I'm doing the show. You can also check it out on lbinside.com with a link posted there nightly. Good night.